Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. You are in the middle, or we are in the middle of the summary. We almost got through it. And we are going to get right into it without a lot of further ado. The one thing I need to tell you is this show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show. I'm not a conservative entertainer, and I'm not looking to become one. I'm not looking to become that really well-polished guy that has a script that I can just rip through. I don't want to say I fly by the seat of my pants, but I basically lay out an outline, and I just go through what needs to be gone through, and I try to cover everything. And as far as I'm concerned, I know sometimes I fall and skin my knees here, and maybe, you know, not very clear, or I don't find necessarily a good way to articulate. Sometimes I'm reaching for words. But the fact is, we don't have a lot of time, and none of the conservative entertainers, as far as I am concerned, have any vested interest in solving this problem. Why? Because they're making millions of dollars. There is no vested interest for Mark Levin, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity. I can just go on and on and on. Whoever your favorite entertainer is, Carl Tuckerson, I don't believe that they can or they would be willing to give up their livelihood to solve the problem. Because if we solve this problem, which we can, and this is exactly what we can do, is solve the problem. This is why I am focused on this. I'm just telling you that they're not vested in this because they're not going to give up their livelihood. They'd actually have to get a job. They'd have to actually go, you know, and most of these guys are probably set so well financially that they could easily just walk away and become a part of the solution. But this little thing called avarice, this thing called greed, the desire to make a little more, it is so rampant in our society today. And that was one of the things that this young single mother that I was sitting next to, actually she wasn't necessarily young, her kids were grown up and so forth, but young compared to me, and you know, it was one of the things that, you know, she pointed out was her perspective of the problems of our society. There's just so much greed that people are just not willing to, you know, just so much bad and corruption. People are not willing to do the right thing anymore. And so it's sad, but I don't believe her. I think she's wrong. I really believe that there are enough patriots to get the state legislatures to do their job. I'll tell you, the day I come to that reckoning, the day I agree that we're too far gone as a people and a society, I do not believe that we're living in the time of Lot where there's not one person worth saving. I believe that there's millions of people that want to engage in the solution. That's why millions of people are listening to all of these different conservative entertainers. And even other people that are independent that go, yeah, this is really screwed up. What can we do? I think everybody would love to see their liberty restored. Not everybody, but almost everybody. The majority of people throughout America want to see smaller government, not bigger government. Those few people that are demanding communism now, that is an outlier group still. And they'll always be in outlier groups. Even when they finally, if they finally win this Bolshevik revolution, they take over, then there'll be even more people when they finally realize the level of despotism and tyranny that they'll have to live under. This is one of the reasons why Jonah Goldberg, when he wrote his book, American Fascism or Liberal Fascism in America, and he has a smiley face on it, he basically says that the only way they can succeed is to constantly make it seem like they're the nice guys and they're doing good things and they're helping people out and getting people to play along. You have to remember, Tiananmen Square was an event, and it wasn't that China wasn't necessarily, because look at Hong Kong. They're playing draconian tactics and measures with them. They're fighting and resisting. But the problem is, if they don't have anybody that they can call on, anybody that they can go to, and anyway, I want to get into the summation. So one of those things that I need to kind of cover is Madison's report on nullification and his notes on his report on the resolutions, and more importantly, his notes on nullification. And so what we'll do is we'll dive into that as soon as, let me see, I got plenty of time. So we'll go ahead and get into where we kind of left off, because that's what I promised and that's what I would need to do today, is dive into this report and this on nullification, the notes on nullification. So forgive me for being a little scatterhead. I'm probably lacking oxygen, because I've noticed that when I when I have a hard time articulating and putting my thoughts together, I just look and, oh, wow, I'm really low on oxygen. So take a deep breath. Okay, there we go. All right, so Madison's report on the Virginia resolutions was a response, just like Jefferson's response that we just went through on the Kentucky resolutions of 1799. Now, Jefferson did his response as resolutions instead of a report. And Madison felt that instead of doing resolutions, he was going to do a report on it, because he felt he needed to justify that the resolutions still stand. He wasn't going to change the position, because he actually covered everything in those resolutions, called out that the desire to maintain unity and being a part of the Union was first and foremost. And so in his report, he basically kind of pointed out and reemphasized everything that was in the Virginia resolutions that were promulgated in 1798 in December. So this report actually started going through and pointing out some very, very serious responses. And the first one was in paragraph 6. He basically made the comment of the no favorable comment could be made on the sentiments here expressed. And so he was really disappointed. And there's no doubt in my mind he was upset. Thomas Jefferson was lamenting. I don't think he was having an emotional meltdown. I honestly believe he was upset, and he just used those words as a very powerful expression to help them understand where he was and where they were going, and the problem of these other states failing to do their doggone job and not understanding that they had to keep the government in check. So the most important part of this particular document that Madison created in the reports on the resolution was as far as I'm concerned, was the emphasis when he got into, and it was basically down around paragraph 18, where he really emphasizes who the parties to the compact are, and that only the parties, when it comes to violations of this very particular compact, there is no tribunal above them. I mean, he emphasizes this, and he emphasizes the fact that he's calling for parties, not a single party. And he goes on, and he also kind of alludes to the fact in here that they need to make a very cognitive, the parties need to make a very cognitive decision and be very aware of the fact that the path they're going down, you know, there are consequences that, you know, if it's a nullification path, then they're going to have to leave the Union. If it is interposition, then they are going to have to force the federal government into, you know, this, we'll call it compliance. There's the word right there, compliance. So more importantly, so there was that part. But more importantly, he also lays out or draws the line between the states and the judiciary, or I should say the Supreme Court. This is really important, folks. Clearly, he laid it out that the judiciary, the Supreme Court, does not have the authority to oversee things that are unconstitutional. In other words, if the parties are claiming that they have this problem with the compact and they're working amongst themselves, what does the federal government do? They have to wait. They have to wait for the parties. They have to wait for the parents to come back into the room and say, okay, this is going to be your punishment. Now, there's nobody, as an adult that wants to sit around and wait for their punishment. And as a matter of fact, people have become so maniacal that they're going to do everything they can to, one, avoid punishment, and or they're going to go down the path of demanding that, you know, especially with progressives today, they're going to basically demand that, hey, you don't have any right. You can't do this. You know, you have to do that, or what have you. And I'm going to tell you that as we look, it's kind of like when you're addressing your child, you know, you have all the authority and you know that they may have, you know, something that they might try to hurt you with, but they can't hurt you. As a matter of fact, any time the federal government or a central power or a, you know, king or what have you exercises any kind of, and just understand here, even if he can get people like in the military, a few people or a part of the military to be willing to actually strike out against the states that are standing up, it would bode so poorly upon, one, the federal government. I mean, this is one of the reasons why it played in Lincoln's hands when the southern states seceded. I want you to understand this, that when they seceded, Lincoln used that with demagoguery to say, we got to punish them. They can't do that. And he was the one that was lying and telling that they couldn't do that. They couldn't secede. When clearly in Madison's notes and in many other documents from the Federalist Papers, the ratification debates, all sorts of other documents, there is overwhelming evidence that a state can walk away, or any party can walk away from a contract once the contract has been violated. You are not surrendering, you're not subjugated in joining this union and surrendering your sovereignty. There's just no way that was ever done. Anyway, we'll be back and I'll wrap up on these resolutions or the note on them or the report, and we'll get to the notes. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so this is getting a little frustrating on my end because just these little confusing things between report and notes, they, you know, I could say 1800, 1834, what have you. But in this particular case, this is, the document is titled The Notes on the Resolutions. And so anyway, forgive me if I'm confusing you. I'm not trying to, but it is not that complicated. It's just that, again, it doesn't help when you have a oxygen-deprived brain. And so anyway, let me just move forward. the point I was trying to bring up after Madison really emphasized, and he emphasized it very clearly in this document, the report on the Virginia Resolutions of 1800, he was very clear about the states having all the authority, that there was no court in the world superior to the states regarding this Constitution. No, the UN, international court, no court can step in and assume any authority over that Constitution. Only the states have that authority. And I just want you to understand that we, the international authority, or I should say international courts, UN, or any type of foreign authority that would try to assert authority over us, even if they think because we've joined the UN that they have this, they do not even understand it. They're not going to admit or acknowledge, it would be in complete denial, that the federal government at the time we went into the UN had no ability, no constitutional ability or jurisdiction to be able to create the treaty to the UN that they did. And why? Because that power was never enumerated to them. As I told you, it was clear in the terms and definitions that they could only make treaties regarding the powers that were enumerated among them. There was never a power that allowed us to join or give them the power to join in a world government or another form of governance, period. So anyway, back to the judiciary, though, when it came down to it, because the other states were claiming, well, the Supreme Court is the final arbiter. They're the ones that have the, you know, the oversight of the Constitution. And this is where he said, but he absolutely objects, and he proves that the judiciary can't even be trusted, that they, too, would aggrandize just like anybody else. And so, and this was in paragraphs 23 to the end. And so here we have clarity from the initial audit and the initial call for, you know, organizing by Jefferson in his amendment or his resolutions of 98. Then Madison basically came on and said, yes, we have to do this. And not only do we have to do this, we are duty bound to do this. We have no option other than to do this to actually preserve the Union and to preserve the Constitution. Then the other states piled in and said, you have no authority. You guys can't do this. The Supreme Court has to do this. We can't. And by the way, we, you know, don't find any problems with this. And we think you're being seditious and all these other insinuations. And therefore, Jefferson responds in kind. I'm kind of recapping again. In his resolutions of 99, in lamenting and saying we can do that. So in this report, Madison, instead of even, you know, not defending, instead of taking insult and then saying, okay, we have, you know, we have every intent of being a part of the Union, as Jefferson stated. But in this particular case, he actually justifies everything he said. He was right about what he said and how he said it, and there was no backing down. There was no political bowing or anything else. He was very clear in this that he was spot on. And so when we get to the notes in 1834, now, wow, that's 34 years later. Now, most people said Madison was very inconsistent in some one thing over another thing over another thing over another thing. And I'm here to tell you that anybody that says that, I'd love them to show me how, because Dr. Vile has said that before. He says he kind of went back and forth, vacillated. I don't see it. I see that he may look at things, because one of the things I learned about Madison in reading the notes on nullification, and I actually kind of played into it because I'd never actually read this thing from the first paragraph to the last paragraph all the way through. I've always either done searches and done, you know, read up and read down, but I've never read everything in full context from the beginning to the end. This was the first time. I've done it several times and, you know, zooming in on either plural, single, nullification, interposition, and, you know, kind of go ahead and beyond. Anyway, my point is that even in this document, there are a couple of instances where he starts taking the stand and debating for nullification. And when he's doing that, you'd think that he's actually supporting nullification, when he's really not. He still, at the end of every time, because I was always looking at it from the interposition side and his and the position he was taking, and never took the nullification side and how he was talking about, you know, the rights instilled and those, you know, and the focus of the argument for nullification, never realized that he had done this in here. So anyway, I'm just kind of exposing, just being honest with you, that when you go through this, you'll actually find that Madison, maybe some people might think that he's being hypocritical, but if you closely read this, he's just providing the argument and then giving you irrefutable proof that the argument is failed, the argument has flaws to it, and or the argument does not support the ultimate end, and the ultimate end is getting compliance to the compact. Bottom line. And that's why he lays it out and says, look, if you go down this path of nullification and going down this path of being inconsistent and ununiform in the union, as well as the application of the laws by the federal government without being uniform, then we're going down this destructive path of anarchy. And this is how we're going to be pulled apart. And that's what we're seeing today. We do see this anarchy. We do see how some states are nullifying unconstitutional laws instead of joining together and standing up and saying, you have no authority to do these things. So I'm hoping now that we've kind of wrapped this up in a show and a half and kind of summarizing, what I pray is that you take the time to read these. Just don't take my word for it. Take the time to read these. And just, if you have to go in a closet and to say, kids or sweetheart, I need to read this. Or, sweetheart, we need to read this. And then take turns reading one paragraph, and then your spouse reads the other paragraph. Back and forth, back and forth. Go through this kind of like you're reading scripture. And then once you get to a point, stop and you can talk and say, okay, what about this and what about that? Or if something really jumps out, stop and say, why, do you understand this? What is he talking about? Or better yet, you know, go and do the research if there's something you don't understand to go look at. Like in the notes on nullification, Madison refers to, and he actually quotes and cites his words from the resolutions as well as from the report. It's amazing. This guy is so, he has it so together. I wish he was here today, but he's not. And so it leaves me. It leaves you, and it leaves everybody who loves the Constitution, I don't want to say abandoned, but it puts the burden on us. Okay, we don't have a Madison, but can you be that Madison? I'm willing to be that Madison, and we need hundreds of Madisons to start articulating. We can't allow one person to be the messenger. Why? Because if you make one person the messenger, if you make one person the only and sole focus, like a prophet, then the whole movement, the whole theology or ideology of what we're doing is all susceptible to that one person. That one person gets killed, then it kills the movement. We can't allow that. This is why you can't just be a... For us to succeed, you can't be a part-time or a partial participant. We need to get you motivated to doing more things. And so this is why I'm kind of going to go down this path of with a conversation I had. And I thought it was pretty enlightening. It was good. And every time I talk to people, when I hear people, you know, whether they, if you want to refer to it as criticism, I think it's criticism. It's good criticism. There's no such thing as bad criticism, by the way. People take certain words as like, that's an offensive word. Like, you're criticizing me? Well, that's bad. You have no right to criticize me. Who do you think you are? Folks, we have to take criticism. We have to look at criticism, take it on the chin, and accept the criticism based on the paradigm. We can't just be dismissive and say, well, that's just your opinion, and be dismissive because we don't like criticism. The fact is that we're not perfect, and I realize I'm not perfect, and I was told that I'm not perfect by this, again, by this person I was on this flight with this last week. Now, I just want you to also understand that moving into this conversation I want to have, what I want to do is I want to impart with you with what's going on today, why things are so important that we're losing time. I've wasted enough of my own time getting here and getting to this point and having this show and trying to make sure that I'm providing you the content. And I know that there are plenty of people out there that appreciate this. And I know that there's too many people out there that just tune in because maybe I have a good sounding voice, or maybe it's something different that they, you know, are tired of hearing what they're hearing on other channels. I don't know why, you know, so many people are tuning in and I'm not getting that level of feedback. I'm getting a lot of feedback, but not to the tune of where we're being ranked on streaming and where, you know, how many people are actually listening to this show. So we need you. We need to hear from you, and we need you to get more involved to let us know what you need and what you're doing. But we'll talk more about this after these two breaks, these two promos.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
I haven't mentioned this before, but one of my pages that we kind of haven't... So I have a Reclaiming the Republic page on Facebook, and I was going to actually try to really launch that, but I realized I probably didn't know what I was doing, so I just kind of let it sit there. Well, all of a sudden, a little while ago, as I started going up in the ranks on streaming and so forth, and probably people had heard, I think that there's something going on that I figured, well, let me just quickly share this with you. It seems like over the past year, maybe two, it was just a couple, and then all of a sudden, lately, there have been more and more and more Mohammedans that are liking my page. And I'm going, this is interesting. Why? And most of these people are from like India, Pakistan, and that area. And I'm going, well, you know, I know that Indians, the country India, and the inhabitants who are typically... I forget. I guess there's two different faiths, and so Sheikh and so forth. Anyway, and I probably got it all wrong, and I'm really bad with those types of names and that type of thing. But bottom line is, I do know that a lot of the real original culture of India loved liberty. However, it's going through a mass migration and a mass, I'll say, a proselyting and infiltration of Islam in India. As a matter of fact, if you look at Persia, Persia used to be Zoroastrian. Now, the Zoroastrian faith was eradicated hundreds of years ago because the Mohammedans basically went in there and they killed anybody that wouldn't bow or you know, accept Allah. I mean, it died. They killed that religion. And this is happening in India as well. And India's got billions of people. Now, but the interesting thing is that it seems like everybody that has been liking this page from India happens to be a Mohammedan. And so I think the word's getting out that, hey, there's this guy that hates Mohammedans. And, you know, this isn't true. I don't hate Mohammedans. I just realize that they can't embrace the Constitution ideologically. They technically and legally can't become citizens, because the process of becoming a citizen, you have to abjure and you have to basically disavow yourself from any potent sovereign or any state, which means Allah and Islam. You have to put the Constitution first and foremost. And so when it comes to the laws of the land, I mean, I do not believe that we jeopardize ourselves as Christians or any faith by putting the Constitution and the laws of the land first and foremost. However, when you have a legal system that is baked into Islam, such as Sharia law, and you have to demand that, then what you are doing is you're instantly coming in to become a citizen to annihilate or do away with something you just basically took an oath to support, which means that you really didn't, you're not fulfilling that oath. You are actually fulfilling your allegiance and alliance with your original potent and your original sovereign and or ideology. And so, folks, you can't have it both ways. And so it's not that I'm a hater, but I do realize that when people are asserting that they have a war on your faith, your ideology, your government, and your religion, and then they're becoming citizens or trying to become citizens in your nation with this whole thing, you know, like the fingers are crossed behind their back, with no intent in truly supporting the nation and its constitution and or its laws, then I have a problem with that. And they need to go back to wherever they want to have their theocracy. They're not having their theocracy here. We did not have a national theocracy, and we're not going to go down that direction. And we can't. The Constitution doesn't allow it, nor does the oath, and nor does anybody that's a citizen. You should be losing your citizenship when you go back into these, you know, mosques and go back into supporting and calling for Sharia law and supporting that kind of government, period. I'm sorry. But anyway, and I'm talking about, you know, it's not just a few. It's actually racked up into the hundreds now. And I'm going, wow, I think I got like 500 likes from Mohammedans. I have done nothing on that site, nothing on it for years. So anywho, just wanted to share that with you. But let me get back to this real quick conversation I had on this airplane. And one of the things I've constantly said to you, and I mentioned yesterday about stopping to watch the news. You don't watch news anymore. Don't watch television. If you're going to take time, maximize your time with your loved one, your spouse, your family, or what have you, and watch good quality content instead of, you know, allowing the slime to come into your house on a daily basis from the networks and so forth. They are using anything and everything to support their narrative, and they're providing content. I mean, even in some of the decent content that we see today, even in the decent content, it still has undertones and slime that is associating to, you know, either challenging creation or what have you. And it's just, I go, why are they doing this other than the fact that it is all a part of being consistent in their messaging and narrative? If you don't understand the way the entertainment system is working, it is all aligned with public relations and an indoctrination narrative. This actually proves the fact that they are colluding and working together in indoctrinating us to keep us completely oblivious to what they are trying to do by using entertainment from musicians and songs, and in every form of entertainment that we're getting is driving us down this path of where they want to lead us. The only place where you're getting anything that's contradicting what they're saying is either in these, you know, entertainment, these conservative entertainment shows, or in these in the churches where you're hearing, you know, ministers or your way leader or whoever is giving you the sermon is giving you a contradiction to everything that you're hearing throughout society. Fact of the matter is, what this all is basically pointing to is that we are being manipulated. We are being indoctrinated. You can't look at it any other way, because there are way too many. I've even seen the montage of videos of hosts on TV during the Obama administration when they talked about the Benghazi issue, and they how every single host use the exact same words. You cannot tell me that that's a coincidence. You can't tell me that when you keep on going through this. I even think Sean Hannity has proven these things. So the conservative entertainers have actually proven all of this stuff. So I'm thinking that everybody that's listening to me right now is beyond that. And this is where we need to really start looking at what we need to do to go beyond this. But here is where my fallacy is. When I was sitting there talking to she's actually pretty smart. She's in biotech and she's bioengineering and what have you. And so very well educated. And then she's a woman of science, this gal I was sitting next to on this flight. And so I gave her a little bit of my background. I told her that I retired from the Marine Corps, was in the intelligence community, did all this. And and then I started talking to her about, you know, what people need to do. And she goes, well, you know, you don't see things the way everybody else does. And she says, and you have a completely, you know, different kind of wiring. And I go, okay, I think she has a point here. And one of the things that's different about me that most people don't have is that most people don't have self-discipline. I don't think that you're not capable. It's just that going through the military, especially going through the Marine Corps boot camp, you get disciplined into behaving and doing and acting very specifically. And you don't just, you know, constantly allow. I mean, it's not that you're not allowed, but you learn how to do self-discipline, to where you have to focus on the mission and the mission comes first and that type of thing, where most people don't get that. And so I realized, and I knew a long time ago when I was, you know, out of the Marine Corps working in engineering and management of people on technical side or management of people on a personnel side. And I kind of acknowledge the fact that I tend to marginalize, you know, what really has to be done for people to become successful. So I've really tried to get better at acknowledging, understanding, and helping people understand what they have to do to succeed. So with that, I still believe that there is this marginalization because not everybody is the same. Everything is a case by case. I get that. And I believe that there is the Venn model or whatever, where, you know, there's all of this. There is a level of overlap for most people. So there's a good percentage of people that have this, you know, commonalities amongst all people. There's a greater commonality with a smaller group, but the large group, there's still some bit of overlap. In fact, the fact is, folks, I don't know how to necessarily help you. But I do know that if you start really forcing yourself and disciplining yourself to doing these very specific things and, you know, just giving up with, like, smoking, if you want to quit smoking, if you just give it up and say, I can't afford this anymore, then sit down and do the math on it. Just sit down and do what you need to do so that you have a full cognitive explanation. It doesn't take away the physical wants and dependencies of that addiction and what have you. And you may need help. Some people need help. Some people don't need help. When I quit smoking twice. I smoked when I was a young kid, And then I smoked again when I was a little bit older, while I was still early in the Marine Corps. Fact of the matter is I quit both times after smoking for a while and getting addicted again. I quit cold turkey both times, and I guess most people can't do that, and I don't understand that, and that's what I'm trying to convey here. I understand that some of us, a lot of us, are different in different ways, but I'll be right back after these two promos.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so my point is that as I talk to you about you got to do this, you got to do that, I may make it seem like it's really not that difficult. It's a lot easier. I honestly believe, and this is one of the things I've learned, is that a marathon may be hard, but the hardest step is the first. And that if you keep making steps, you take the next step, the next step, the next step, and you just focus on the next step, getting the next step executed, execute the next one, execute the next one, execute the step that you have to execute right now, and you keep on doing it, you'll, next thing you know, you'll find that you have completed that marathon. It's just getting your mind to get you moving. And once you break inertia, there's this other old saying, bodies in motion tend to stay in motion. Bodies at rest tend to stay at rest. And so you have to break inertia. You have to get moving. And so I believe that that is the key. And I believe that the disciplining and keeping the consistency, those types of things, you kind of have to learn yourself. I can't execute for you, and I can't help you understand the importance of continuing, but I do believe, and this is one of the things that I am finding, is that I do believe as I'm moving forward right now, I am connecting more and more with people I've connected before that kind of dropped away because during the Trump era, they didn't see a need. They didn't see this demand, or, you know, why did they need to, you know, do anything? Trump is, you know, there's no problem. Now that Biden is in office, he's only been in office, and we're seeing the ramifications, I am now being pulled a lot more. And I know that I could be being pulled a lot more from you, and I'm not asking you not to be pulling on me. I'm asking if you are out there listening to me and you don't know what to do and you're not getting engaged, contact us, let us know, and we will start pointing you. The first thing I'm going to point you to is the NLA. So if you call me, or I should say, if you call that number, our
425-270-5416, our comment line. You call and say, hey, I'd like to get involved. The first thing I will do is I will point you towards, and just send us an email too, it'd be easier. info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. If you contact us, the first thing I'm going to do is point you to the NLA. So before you contact me, it might be better to, you know, just contact the NLA first to say, hey, I'd like to get involved with Republic Review with the NLA. And how do I do this? And then if they don't know what to do, then come back and say, because there's a good chance that the person in your state is just not completely on board with what and how to do. And I think they'll probably say, well, you need to work with GR. And that's all. That's fine. That's fine and good. But I want you to at least start getting and making these other connections, because working with other people helps you succeed. If you work by yourself and you struggle, 9 times out of 10, most people quit. They quit when they don't have an immediate success, or they're not having what they perceive as the successes that they need. So anyway, if you look at what's going on in America today, there are those who do not feel the heat is hot enough. But I believe, and like I just said, I believe that now that people have seen what Biden is doing, they are feeling the heat. Now, those who don't think it's hot enough, I'm going to tell you, when they do feel the heat, it'll be too hot at that point. It'll be at a point where they're done. They're going to be boiled. They will be the boiled frog, because they just think, oh, yeah, it's hot, but I can still get out. And that mentality is a flawed mentality. And that is the mentality that has proven, historically, proven to destroy societies. You need to get more aggressive in getting these people to at least, you know, say, you know what? Let's say you're right. Let's say it's not hot enough, but let's take a jump out and look at it from a different perspective. Or let's engage in this different perspective or what have you. By doing that, it gets them to at least say, yeah, okay, you know, there's nothing wrong with just checking or getting involved or actually learning about alternatives or what have you. Just get them to at least get beyond their little cell or their little capsule that they're hiding in, and get them to at least, you know, understand that there are other things that we could be doing, or there could be a whole new life that we could be living with liberty. In other words, all of the liberties that we've lost, we can actually restore those liberties. And they have no idea that that can be done unless you share that with them. I want you to understand that they first demonize the threat. And this is what the progressives do. They demonize their threat, and they justify going after those in the way that they say, you know, look at these guys. These guys are like terrorists. That's why I started acknowledging I must be public enemy number one. And anybody that is supporting us must be public enemy number one. This movement is the movement that will actually take away their illegal, their their unjustified, illegal is the best way to say it, but I'll just say unconstitutional is another way of saying it. The powers that they're asserting, they don't have these constitutional powers. They don't have the legal authority to do all of those things. They've created what we call the color of law. They basically assume that they have the power, then they created laws, and then they tell you, okay, you're breaking our law because you're talking about the Constitution when you don't have a right to. You have to talk about, you know, government is all legitimate. You can't challenge our legitimacy. And that's the path that they're going down, and they want to justify their actions of going after people because, hey, look, they're denying us. And they've got so many people that have duped and believing that this is a legitimate government when it's not. This is why there are other organizations, and I truly appreciate, I'll just say her first name, Sue, because Sue is actually a leader. She's been a leader, her and her husband, for a long time in the Constitution Party, teaching the Constitution and so forth. And she works with a few different people, and she's met people that have, you know, different people asserting that they've got a path forward. And so I love the fact that she's out there, and she does see how people get baked in their biases that they're not willing to actually look at not willing to actually look at and review anything else because they felt that they've done it all before. And I've dealt with that. I dealt with that with John Durash. I dealt with that with Bob Schultz. And when I sat down and I talked to Bob Schultz about Republic Review and what I was doing, it didn't take long. It took a few phone calls, you know, and really the majority of those phone calls on my end was just learning about Bob and everything that he's done. And he's done so much. I mean, he is an exemplary leader because he leads by example. John Durash, same way, same thing. Two guys are going down different tacks. One's focused on the petition. One's focused on the common law grand jury. And they did their research and they felt that this was the right way to go. Now, as I sat down and I had these conversations, it took a while, but these men were willing to at least learn. And I understand that there are legitimate things that they're doing. And there's no doubt in my mind that these other organizations that Sue is working with, you know, has this legitimate paradigm that this is a process of way, this is a way of undoing this one thing. But again, undoing one thing is not fixing the entire problem. It's kind of like, you know, even if we could get, you know, abortion to be stopped in America, that doesn't get rid of all of the rest of the unconstitutional government, all of our other problems that are actually out there that are burning and raging the fire closer and closer to us to our ultimate demise. We can't allow ourselves to be focused on the single problem that, you know, our passion drives us on. We have to be seeking full compliance. And this is why I've come to the conclusion that canonizing the Constitution is critical and far more important than anything else. And so when we look at history, when we look at how we have and how the people in history, and I hate to go just to Germany because you can go to China, you can go to Cambodia, you can go to all of these other countries that have fell, Cuba. Every place where they have fell to statism, communism, you'll actually see the process of who they identified as the threats and how they got rid of them. And then over time, you know, once they get through their own little Holocaust, and I know that, you know, the Holocaust means something very specific, but every, you know, when millions of people died in Russia, when millions of people died in China, are their lives less than those who died in the Holocaust? Because the reasons are the same. They were isolated for their beliefs, and they were perceived as a threat, whether it was the Jewish faith, whether it was the Falun Dong in China today, who are being used as the political prisoners for live organ harvesting and so forth. So here we go, folks. I don't want to just keep on going in circles here, but the fact is that these things are all the same, and we're seeing the exact same thing happening and panning out here in America. And the biggest threat right now are patriots, Christians, and people who love the Constitution and are talking and teaching people about the Constitution. I will say this, on that flight, the flight attendant came to me and said, "Can you keep your voice down? Because I know you're passionate, but you're upsetting some of the other people in the first class compartment." And I'm going, huh. And you know what? I hope I did get him upset. I hope that, not that I was talking loud, but if they hate the Constitution, then let's get their emotions, because when people start getting emotional, they start making mistakes. Anyway, we will be back with some more content and the Douglas Gibbs Show, or my interview with him, in the next show. So we'll be right back. I'm J.R. Mobley, Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. God bless. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show
in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.